Why don't you guys introduce yourself and tell us how Mohawk Radio got started?
Of course. I'm Mia, I'm the lead singer, Mohawk Radio.
I'm Sean, the bassist.
And I'm James, the lead guitarist.
And we're missing Dave tonight, our drummer, but he's around somewhere, causing havoc.
Being a family man.
Oh, he's one of those, huh?
Yeah. we're proud of him for that.
Nice. Well, I got to start off with the obvious question. You guys have such a thick, layered sound. I mean, it's awesome. You guys sound like $1 million coming through the speakers. So how do you guys get your sound?
Oh, boys, I'll let you answer that question.
Speak clearly is the first step to getting a sound. to be honest, I mean, it's only, you know, there's two of us playing guitars, like this is bass guitar and electric guitar, and there's drums as well. So I think really the main thing that the aspects is the vocals lead you and the sound complements it. So, yeah. You know, we don't overdo it with the instrumentation. It just kind of comes with the vocals, take your attention, and then we just try and complement the vocals with our instrumentation.
And Mia, you've got some amazing vocals too, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Trying. For my sins, my sins, I'm a lead singer in a band.
Well, I was gonna ask, I mean, like, do you practice all the time or what? Because, like, you know, the only other alternative is I can think of is, like, you know, when your firstborn comes into this world, Satan shows up at the hospital and asks you to remember the deal. You know?
So. Well, that happened as well, in conjunction with getting thrown down to the Bermuda Triangle. No, but we practice a few times a week, and then we gig a lot as well. So mm-hmm. We've been able to really perfect our sound, and that's always constantly evolving as well, which is really exciting because we started off, we had our first EP, and obviously the evolution to the next EP, and then the new stuff that we're writing. So it's obviously always constantly growing and changing, and I think I really found my voice when I joined this band. Absolutely.
Nice. Now, as far as the guitars go, I'm a guitarist myself. I noticed you play a Parker. You know, I love gear, man. So let's talk about the gear you two guys use.
Yeah, everybody does mention the Parker. It's a rare beast and a lucky find. It was a lucky find, you know. It's by far and away the best instrument I've ever played. So if Parker were listening by any chance, the endorsement deals, it's open.
Yeah, you know, they only have, they're down to one endorsee now.
Really?
Yeah, Adrian Ballou.
Well, I'd like to be a partner.
Yeah, they just lost, didn't lose. I think the contract was up, but they're no longer with Vernon Reed from Living Color. He went over to PRS.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so that tells you how much I know about guitars. So
wow, that's amazing. Well, James Gregory from Mohawk Radio is up for grabs, Parker, if you're interested.
Nice. Well, James, let me ask you a Parker question. I hear, like, a lot of good things about Parker, but one thing I hear that people are constantly arguing about is, like, it's the prettiest guitar in the world or the ugliest guitar in the world. Which do you think?
If Parker were listening, so, yeah, by far and away the prettiest guitar in the world. It's not the aesthetics, though. It's the playability, man. It's the finest instrument I've played. So it's still with me. And, yeah, that's what I'm going to use going forward.
Nice. So, Sean, what do you use bass-wise?
I just use a Fender Precision. It's like a second-hand one, really. It's not more special. I started out as a guitarist anyway. And basically, I play the bass because no one else will, really, more than anything else. But the only interesting thing, really, gear-wise, that we've got going on with the bass is that the bass head that we use, even though we can't use the cab anymore because it's the biggest thing. Well, it's actually taller than me.
Nice. Okay, what is it, like an 810 or something? Or
It's an old PD Mega Bass.
Oh.
Massive thing from the 80s. But it was once Simply Red's. Apparently, old Tory bass amp. We've got someone, which isn't exactly the style of music that Mo are doing, but it's done us well.
Yeah. Now, don't you think the Fender P bass, man, has like such a nice, I mean, it's like the Strat of the bass world. It's got that bell.
Yeah,
it's got that awesome bell tone to it. I just can't find anybody that replicates it.
But it was we did a little show last night with four other bands, and every one of the other bands had some kind of Fender bass.
Exactly. You can drop those down a flight of stairs and they'll stay in tune too.
Yeah, it's got the cracks all over it, but it still just keeps on working. And it sounds better than it played. It's not my favourite player in the world. I had a better player when we first started the thing, the band. But this one definitely sounds an awful lot better. We couldn't even use the old bass in the studio. It just sounded that rubbish.
Just in case Fender were listening, that was compliment.
Man,
compliments coming a roundabout way from me, really.
When you're British,
I think what Fender does is, if you want a signature model, they change one little tiny thing and like, oh, okay, that's Sean's signature bass now. You know, because he uses flathead screws on the pick guard. Well, Mia, how do you get your voice the way it is? Because like, one thing I noticed is, like, well, if you notice in rock music particularly, there's signature voices. Like, you have Freddie Mercury, you know, I would maybe Axl Rose, I don't know, I wouldn't say so much him, but he's got the power behind it, you know. But like, you, I would put you up with Ann Wilson. Wow. Like of Heart. I mean, if you listen to Heart concerts, like, whenever Anne's on stage, whenever she's singing, she owns that whole, you know, that whole concert.
Yeah, I agree. Well, it's kind of a funny thing because my dad actually toured with Heart and Bryan Adams back in the 80s. So when my mom was pregnant with me, I was listening to her singing, so maybe I got touched. Maybe it wasn't the devil. Maybe it was Ann Wilson. So there you go.
It could have been. She could have touched your mom's belly and blessed you.
Yeah, there you go. So it was. She just transferred some of her energy, kind of like Madonna, Britney Spears style.
Yeah, but, yeah,
yeah.
Well, I mean, did you notice at a young age that you had that power? Because I always wondered if, you know, you come into a talent like that, or if you have to work at it, or both.
I think both. I've done musical theater from when I was a kid, you know, which is, I've just been a band geek kind of my whole life. And then when I moved to the UK, it just really evolved. And prior to that, I had a little bit of a vocal training, operatic vocal training, which has really taught me a whole lot about having to use how to use my instrument. Because before that, I was very much like a babe in the woods. And I still am to some extent. There's still a lot to learn about, like, voice preservation, et cetera. Because, you know, when you get on stage, you just want to blast it and just, you know, just raise the roof. But you have to kind of keep it in check and learn how to use it properly. So
nice. Yeah. Now, what does operatic vocal training entail? Because I picture an Italian guy, like, yelling at you all day.
Oh, no. Well, I had the most amazing opera teacher. She was actually a diva. And she used to come in with, like, you know, like, her hair and her wigs and her eyelashes and like tiaras, and it was just like incredible. Her name was Marcel, and it's pretty much like if you went somewhere and they said the way you've been walking your whole life is wrong and you need to start again. So I had like a lot of different exercises, like, you know, stacks of books on my stomach and, you know, just
are
like,
you serious?
Yeah, it was just crazy.
Like, it wasn't like a Mr. Miyagi thing where she cons you into wax in her car, is it?
No, there wasn't any waxing of her car, but I did have to do her nails a few times.
Oh, wow. Like wax on, wax off, and then everything like that.
Exactly. No. Shellac on, shellac off.
Oh, nice, nice. Well, how did Mohawk Radio meet? How did you guys meet and get together and form a band?
We met when I moved to the UK, and these guys were looking for a singer. So I came to Sean's house, and they lured me into the basement, and then we just started jamming, really. And what happened next, guys? Yeah.
Let me just put it, it's not as seedy as this house.
So it wasn't like a Bill Cosby thing, like, come down to the basement and I'll fix you a drink or anything.
Yeah, and then basically the rest was history from there. We heard Mia sing. We were looking for a front person, a singer, for a while to sort of top off what me and Sean have been trying to do for a while musically, because me and Sean have been working together for a long time. And Mia came in, and the fit was perfect and instant. So we just went on from there.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the cool thing is, too, like, James, from your point of view, like, bass player and singers are the hardest members of any band to find, I think.
Unless you're in Manchester, and then it turns out to be drummers. No offense, really? Dave.
Where are you?
No, you're quite right. Bass players, that's why Sean, who is a phenomenal guitarist, I had to kind of say, look, mate, I don't really want to play bass, so you're going to have to do it. And then he took the job, so he went through it from there. And then, we came across Mia as a vocalist.
Yeah, see, Sean, that's what you get for owning a bass, man.
Yeah.
You end up playing it.
So, yeah, feels your fate, Sean.
Exactly. Well, you guys all do a phenomenal job at it. I mean, what I want to know, too, is how do you get your music on the air? Because I don't think, you know, once they hear your stuff, it's hard for you guys to go places.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've had an incredible amount of support. So right from the beginning, all of our friends, we've had friends who are really amazing at recording and web designers, et cetera, et cetera. So they helped us kind of build the brand from the very beginning. And then, which gave us a platform to then approach, you know, like local radio. So we have our friend Nigel, who's incredible, and Paul at Pure FM, which is like our local station to where we live, which then kind of tippled over into Real Radio XS, which is a big rock station. And gosh, they really support us a lot, play our music. They're really, really connected with us as well. So, and then, you know, obviously you guys and other, we're out in Germany. We're, you know, played all over the UK now, which is fantastic. I get a lot of support from local radio in Bermuda, where I'm from. They're playing us all the time there. And, you know, we got a message from a guy in Botswana. That was pretty cool. So, you know, it's all over the place. So, I mean, it started off really as having great support from a core foundation of friends who we're really thankful for. And then people who just kind of, you know, heard us and have bought into us and believe in us. So,
Now, how did you guys start playing the festival circuit, too? Because you guys are starting to play festivals now, too, right?
Yeah.
To be fair, Gregory did an awful lot of applying for festivals for a number of months, and first of all, we didn't really get any sort of responses back. And then by the time that we had like sort of the second EP, people started to respond and gave us a chance to go to other places. And since we've been down to certain festivals, we've been invited back to many of the festivals, and it's just sort of built that way. Really, we've always generally been invited back, so yeah. It's easy to continue going to their places year on year.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Now, do you find playing festivals and outdoor places are different or contrasts significantly between playing the bars? Because I'm from the music scene myself, and I personally like playing bars better. But what are you guys' thoughts on that?
I personally love playing both, but the festival circuit, particularly one festival that we play in Somerset, Satin Field, we made some like brilliant friends, and I really, really just love the vibe, especially in the UK. It's such a festival culture. I mean, because obviously we have some of the biggest festivals in the world, like Glastonbury, for example. So people are really into it here, which is part of the reason why I was attracted to come to the UK in the first place. What do you guys like?
To me, it makes no odds, to be honest. As long as everybody's having a good time in the audience and we're having a good time on stage, then that's what we're there for. So we can be indoors, outdoors, being rained on, being shone on. It's just all good to get on the stage and play. That's my view.
Yeah.
The main thing I don't like about, I've played a few festivals myself, and you always get that one jag off in the audience that happens to have a bunch of water bottles, and then once you know, and then him and his buddy are like, okay, 10 points for the singer, 15 points for the guitarist, you know, like if they can like tag one of us. And I've had that happen before.
Stockport in Manchester, so there's a lot of protective screens around stages.
Manchester, yeah, it's hardcore.
Now, have you guys played outside the UK yet, or are you guys planning to, or?
Yeah, we played in New Orleans earlier this year. Yeah, we went down during the time of the Jazz Fest, and we got to play for the premiere of Bermuda, which was pretty awesome, at the Superdome, which was really, 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 really awesome.
I love New Orleans. We actually, in New Orleans, they call it Nolans.
Nala.
Did you get to check out the French Quarter and everything too?
Yeah. Oh God, yeah, Frenchman Street. Oh gosh, we just like the first day we were there. So my mom came as well, and the boys went off and went to like different pirate bars, and my mom and I like went and checked out the art, etc. And we stopped back and touched base with the guys, and my mom kept going, "Are they gonna be all right?" And I was like, "Mom, they're from Manchester. We'll be fine. They'll be fine. Don't worry."
Nice. Yeah, that's when you know what? That's when you tell your mom, 68% of the of Americans carry firearms.
Yeah, she'll be like, exactly. She's like, okay, I guess they're all right. But yeah, we absolutely love NOLA, and they were the Southern Hospitality show was great. You know, after the show, I was looking for some food, and they'd taken the food, etc., which was fine. But I had like a lovely lady come up to me and say, "Sugar, do you want me to fix you a plate?" And I was like, "Oh, I love you." We just really fell in love with New Orleans.
Oh yeah, hospitality and like if you notice, the food is endless. They have their own culture down there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and we were prior to going. Gregsy and I were vegetarians, and since that, we are not vegetarians.
So there was a moratorium on the vegetarianism for that trip.
Absolutely.
Nice. What about like mainland Europe or Asia? Have you ever traveled around there?
Not yet.
No, we're still working on Europe.
We're working on Europe. I think Germany is going to be our next port of call.
Ah, okay. Now, I heard Halfway to Heaven. If you notice, we did a review on it last week.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant. I love it's got a thick, lush sound to it. It's all its own. But the songs are different enough, but they stay within the same genre, I guess you would say, the same style that is Mohawk Radio. How is your songwriting process?
Well, we write together. So mostly what will happen is that we have the brilliance of Sean and then Greg Z and Dave, and they'll kind of write. Mostly Sean will write the instrumentation, and then obviously Greg Z does as well, and then Dave will put his beats behind it. And they'll just say, Sean will say, "I've been working on this track today, Mia, you know, just take it," and I'll just take it away and write the vocal melody and lyrics. So that's mostly how we've done it, about 95%, 90%, maybe?
Maybe 80%.
Maybe
80%. There's a couple of ones that have just been jammed out in rehearsal.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of tracks that have started off as Mia's vocal melodies.
Yeah. We wrote Lifetime Sunshine in about 7 minutes or something.
That's actually one of my favorites.
Yeah.
It is that and Oblivion.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So,
Oblivion. Yeah. People love that song.
Well, speaking of favorites, all right, if you guys could, and I just say guys in generally, I mean, you know, the band, guys and girl.
That's cool.
If you could take each, and this is a question individually for each one of you, if you could take one song, and then that's the one song that defines Mohawk Radio, what would that be and why?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh my God. I thought you were going to say ourselves. I was like, I've got it.
Like, because you're going to probably come up with three different answers, or two.
Mohawk, I don't, Mohawk Radio,
Or one answer if, like, two of you follow the other one.
this is hard. This is really a difficult question. What would you say, Sean?
I probably would have to say, for the moment, anyway. I'd probably have to say Lifetime Sunshine.
Lifetime Sunshine. Lifetime Sunshine? Yeah, we'll say Lifetime Sunshine at the moment. That's a song. But do you want, like, a song, like, another song from a different artist?
No, one of your own.
Lifetime Sunshine. Okay, no. Two million Heartbeats.
I'm going to say Hocus Pocus.
Oh, Hocus Pocus.
Because I think it encapsulates every aspect of what we deliver as a band.
Nice. Now, why Lifetime Sunshine for you two?
I think because it tells our story. It tells the story of
the Mohawk Radio
story.
It's the meaning of the song.
Yeah, the meaning of the song.
Meaning from Bermuda to Manchester and things like that.
Yeah.
And the rain element is because Manchester is. Even though for the past week it's been absolutely got it.
It's been stunning, yeah. So, yeah, it's definitely about, like, us, about me moving to Bermuda, meeting the three of them, like, my unholy trinity, and then what's followed. And just, like, you know, you can have such a lifetime of sunshine and what you want and what people perceive for you to want, but all you want is to just live in a life of rain because it just provides you with, like, the rock and roll aspect, which has been amazing.
Nice. Now, if I were to go to a Mohawk Radio show, having never heard of you guys before or anything, I just happen to have a ticket and for some reason felt like going, even, you know, what would I expect as a first time viewer?
You'd expect a lot of energy and a lot of sex appeal.
So, like, the audience is having sex with each other and stuff? And
now you want to get involved.
So.
Yeah, not. I mean, we haven't taken it there yet, but yeah, mostly just like a lot of, just a lot of raw energy. Big vocals, big guitars.
Just everything being hyper.
Yeah, just drums a hit to your chest, really. I think that's. For people who've never come to our shows before, that's really the main thing. People just say, whoa, you just hit me right in the chest, you know, with every with the instruments of the vocals and everything.
But just to get involved and have a good time as well.
Yeah.
Nice.
We want people to have as much fun in the audience as we have on stage.
Oh, I can imagine too, because I've seen some of your video stuff on YouTube, and it looks like you guys are having fun with what you're doing. You don't really the cool thing is that Halfway to Heaven sounds like it took a lot of work, but then when you see all of you on stage, it sounds like you're having fun.
Yeah. Oh gosh, we have the best time. That's the best time of our lives when the four of us are on the stage together. That's what it's all about.
Now, let me ask you this. If say, because I ask every band this and I always get a million different answers. If Capitol or Virgin or Atlantic or CBS or one of the big, big, big major record labels came up to you and said, we're going to offer you our standard first record contract, would you take it or not?
I would say no, because I'm really happy currently with where we're at in regards. I prefer, well, more of a boutique label.
Nice. So, see, and it's a true question.
Anyway, I think we all are in agreement with that.
I'd agree. I think they can take care of you more, can't
they? Yeah. They can take, I mean, like Big Machine, for example, Taylor Swift's label, they were only small, and now look at them. You know, that appeals to me.
Yep. Well, and it's a trick question too, because these most labels, they're for, I mean, I don't know if you've seen an actual first label contract. I mean, they're pretty lengthy and they're pretty detailed, and it comes to the point where they have a say in what you guys do.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, big time. I think there is that documentary, 30 Seconds to Mars. I watched that. Have you seen that? Yeah, and that's just like, you can't even comprehend it. It's like the Iliad and the Odyssey, you know, contracts. Like, it just blows your mind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I've seen bands where they've gotten signed and, you know, we'll talk to them and stuff and they'll be like, yeah, we got a $50,000 advance and then, you know, we forgot that 50 grand was supposed to make the record.
Yeah. Because
they showed up and asked us how far we were, and we told them we were recording it in the house, and they were like, what? That 50 grand was for a studio.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
So, exactly. You know, but I mean, well, do you find that the days of the major labels are over?
I don't know if they're over, but I think that there's definitely have to be some type of revolution. I think that the old ways that it's been done is potentially quite over. What do you think?
Yeah, Sean? Because there's so many. There's access to almost everything.
Yeah.
Now anyone can do a pretty decent studio job in the house, and for not all that much money. So, and there's 6 billion, or probably more like 7 billion people on the earth, and a good 10% of them will be trying to make music in some one way or another.
Yeah, exactly.
Labels were always the dream that could get you out to certain people, but now social media is such a massive thing that's at people's fingertips. You've got millions of people, you know, online on YouTube, on Facebook, on SoundCloud, etc. And you can put something out and you can pretty much almost do what a label back in the day was meant to do for you, so...
Well, now, do you find on the opposite end of the spectrum, though, that that's created somewhat of a white noise scenario where it's like, okay, now you've got all these bands coming out at all different, you know, to be honest, all different talent levels? Because, you know, from my point of view, like as a media publisher, I get, like literally thousands of songs a day in my email, and I would honestly, to be honest, maybe 20 or 30% are broadcast worthy.
Really? I think, yeah.
Just oversaturation.
I think that goes without saying. I think that just feeds into everything in your personal social media. I mean, think about all the saturation of news feeds that you get. Maybe like two that you'll like that are relevant to you, you know, or you'll make a comment on. I think that, yeah, it absolutely is done a disservice in a way to music on some levels, absolutely.
It shouldn't, because it's not a big deal anymore. It's almost like it's almost the same, it's exactly the same with film. I mean,
yeah.
You used to look forward to like a summer blockbuster and everyone would go and see it.
Yeah.
But now there's loads and there's people making blockbusters in the backyard.
Yeah, exactly. But not to say, but then on another way, it's a great way for people to get out that might not have ever got it before, that are amazing. So it's hard, isn't it?
It's an evolution and people have got to ride with it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, exactly. And I think part of that also isn't just social media, but it's the fact that you can go to, you know, online or at your average brick and mortar store and get the equipment for under $1,000 now to do all of it.
Yeah. It's true, and then you can mask a lot of things. I mean, people make avatars, people hide, and I think that also happens in music. Because you can buy all these things for really inexpensive, and then you can hide, and your music sounds amazing, and then you go to play live, and then it's like...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because you can also fix a lot with the computer, too.
Exactly, but you can't fix live. And I think that that's one thing that we really pride ourselves on, is our live performance.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Now, what do you think, I mean, being at your level with Mohawk Radio, what do you think it takes to rise above the white noise then?
I think what Mia's just said, live performance, getting out, interacting with people, meeting people, making friends along the way, just, you know, being yourself and normal and talking to people after the show.
Performing
to the best that you can, because if there's one person in a room, or if there's 1,000 people in a room, or if you're in a stadium, you're just going to perform the same because you're loving your art, you love what you're doing, and then you just, you know, you're a human being, you go and speak to people after the show, you don't hide yourself away, and, you know, you start to connect with people on that level, and then that starts to spread a little bit more, that you're personable, and, you know, there is a dream about this sort of, superstar kind of aspects of things, but you know, I think people who can engage with everybody else, I think that gets people further. And above, like you say, the white noise aspect, where it's sort of a bit virtual and a little bit fake.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I always tell bands to do, for more exposure, is if they're going to spend $2,000 or $3,000 on making a professional looking music video and throwing it up on YouTube, don't just have that on YouTube. Have like some of your better shows, you know, professionally shot as well. You know, they can see like nice multi-camera setup with, you know, recording the sound straight off the board, mixed in with the crowd audio, and then show that stuff so that they know that it's not just all studio tricks.
Yeah,
I couldn't agree more with that.
I haven't done one of those for a while, really.
Yeah,
there's quite a fair bit on our YouTube channel. It's really raw. They might just be me, myself and Mia with an acoustic guitar up on a field somewhere playing, right up to a professional video. But in between, we've got our live shows on there as well. So I think you're correct with that, you know. Show that it's what you're listening to on the record is what's actually being performed. And
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you guys have a pretty decent YouTube channel, because you've got acoustic shows mixed in with, you know, quick, you know, like, you know, quick little blurbs here and there. And then you've got your official videos. You've got it all mixed in. So like when, you know, like I'm looking at your YouTube channel now, I mean, even just from the titles of the videos, I'm getting, you know, an impression of the band.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, because like,
what type of impression would you get?
Well, like I said, I'm looking at, okay, you've got the official video for Hocus Pocus, and then you've got your, you know, your gig announcements, and then you've got your acoustic shows. I mean, you guys are very, very crowd friendly.
Yeah, we try to be. We love our audiences. We like really do love them, because some people have been there right from when we were playing in like little holes. Literally in Manchester, to like, you know, now where we play like the Academy 3 or, a really top standard venue, and they're still there, and they've just come out and spent their hard earned money over and over and over, brought their friends, you know, so it's just, we just love our audience. We love our friends. They're our friends at the end of the day.
Exactly. And you have to keep up on that too, because people's attention span, you know, isn't what it used to be now that because of all the white noise. So, you know, if you're not constantly showing them stuff on at least a semi-regular basis, they move on, online too. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And yeah, in so many ways, they do forget. I mean, it's just like, all right, that was cool. And now 6 seconds later, what's next?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, well, what do you guys have coming up? I mean, now that the EP's out and everything else, I mean, are you guys going to go like conquer the planet and everything? And
well, we just shot, well, of course, World Domination, obviously. Yeah. We just shot another music video recently for Drive You Down. So we're going to be releasing that. And we've got some gigs coming up as well. We're up and down the country for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and we're also booked into the studio.
We're booked into the studio. Yeah, which is exciting, with our label LMC Records. So we're going to be going into the studio to do some new stuff, which is exciting.